Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tron. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fabulous, Jim, just fabulous. How about you?
Not bad, not bad. September 1st, it's amazing just how quickly things progress and time flies, and here we are, Straight Talk episode number 87. So we're screaming towards our 100th episode. So, you know, that's coming. We're not quite sure what we're going to do for that one next, but we'll find something really cool to do during that. But tonight, we're going to talk about something that, well, Han and I have been, we've been talking about for quite a while, and I think it's important, we do, to be able to get this information out to you. And it's dealing with the contractor and the owner and communication issues. Well, you may say, wow, that sounds boring. Well, we're going to try, hopefully, to make it not boring. But at the same time, this is very important stuff because, as we've seen it in all the years that we've been doing this, there's right ways to have communication and there's wrong ways. And that communication flow is crucial to creating a successful project. And if you don't do it correctly, you really open yourself up to the potential of some very costly situations. And I won't call them bad things, but they're bad. And so you got to be real careful. And so that's why we want to talk about this stuff tonight. And we're going to give you some examples. We're going to give you some thoughts. And we're going to hopefully at least let you have this information so that if you get into a situation where you're going to be either doing a project, thinking about doing a project, or even starting the thought of doing a project, you have this in your background. Because it's just way too important. You know, Han and I have been talking about this. Go ahead, Han.
This is the prime example that this quote applies. Trust me, this is more exciting than watching paint dry. Okay. But the quote is, it's better to have and not need than to need and not have. The information, anytime you do a construction project, if everything goes well in your favor, fantastic. But both Jim and I have been involved in numerous of different projects at different price tags through our career. And I think Jim would say the same. Regardless how hard you work on the project, regardless how diligent you are in covering all the details and every pieces and bits that you can think of, there is one word in all the construction projects that we have no control over, and the word is unforeseen. So things will happen, and hopefully it only happen in a small way, with a small price tag, and hopefully when things happen, it will be beneficial for the team and not against the team, okay? So a lot of this stuff is, it doesn't have to do with design, okay? We would love to design. I would love to design all day long because that's the fun stuff. But once you design it and it goes into construction, then that's the other fun stuff, and managing it, communicating to the rest of the team, the owner, the interior designer, the engineer, and the contractor, as long as everybody sing the same song, read from the same book, it's wonderful. But that doesn't always happen that way, and that's why we feel it's important to have this conversation. because you might run into it, and you may not. But when you do, it'll help you.
You need to be able to be prepared. You know, always be prepared for, as we say, be prepared for the worst. And if you plan for the worst and the best happens, then life's so much easier. And when it comes to dealing with a construction project, sure, there's unforeseens, but it's not just the unforeseens. That's just one aspect. That's just one area that you can get into a sticky situation. It could be as simple as the contractor deciding to circumvent the project process in such a way that he leaves important team members out of the communication path. That's not an unforeseen situation. That's just a failure in the process. Okay. And we're going to talk a little bit at length about that because it's dangerous. Now, let's start with the premise. Yeah, I want to qualify this. I'm going to start with the premise of what is the relationship contractually? Because I think that's the basis of everything that we're going to talk about tonight, is the contractual relationship. When you're doing a project, this could be a new construction, this could be a renovation. I mean, this could be crap, new paint and carpet. It could be that simple. You have at least one contract, and more than likely you're going to have two contracts. The first contract is between you, the owner, and the contractor. That's considered a construction contract. The other contract is going to be between you, the owner, and the architect. That's between us and you. Now, the most important aspect of that contractual relationship is that we, the architect, as the architect, the designer, have absolutely no contractual relationship with the contractor. And there's a reason for that. That separation is crucial, but also, Han, you were saying it pretty succinctly. Most people don't understand that. We really don't have the authority and or the right to tell the contractor to do anything, do we?
No, we don't. What is our primary responsibility on the project, Jim?
Our primary responsibility under the construction contract, I'm sorry, under the contract, is we will design, depending on our contract and what we sign with you as the owner, we will design your project from conception all the way through to permitting. And then during construction, we observe, we don't inspect, that's a very important thing, we observe the construction to make sure that the design intent is carried through construction. And that at the end of the construction period, the original design intent is fulfilled. That's our, in a nutshell, our contractual relationship. Now, you can add things to the contract, but a general rule of thumb is that's the boilerplate contract between you and us as the architect and designer.
So as the observer in the construction process, is it mainly for to make sure that the design is adhered to? Or if there's more to that, like the quality of the work, the material, things that have been, you know, things that have been designed, selected, and stuff like that for the project are being installed according to the way it was designed and specified.
Exactly. Our relationship is one that we look at all aspects of the construction, and this is during the construction period, remember, because that's what we're talking about tonight, owner, contractor, during the construction period in communication. So we'll look at all aspects of the construction and make sure that the design intent, and design intent's a big word, and it covers a lot of things, but the design intent is carried through and performed correctly. And that could include, for example, here's a prime example of design intent. Let's say that we specify a brick product that is a certain size, a normal brick, for example, and has a raked mortar joint. A raked mortar joint is one where it has a smooth, flat indentation, not coved or curved or anything like that. Now, it takes a little bit more work to do that, and also to do it properly so it's watertight needs to be done correctly by a seasoned mason who knows what they're doing. Well, let's say that the contractor puts in a different size brick. Let's say they go with a jumbo brick because, well, it's less work because they can do it quicker because the bricks are bigger. And so the design intent is not followed through there. It's not the right size or shape. And they decide to do it with just a generic tooled cove joint. Okay. Well, the design intent is not carried through with that solution. And in our observation, we would call that out and make that known to the owner that he is not or she is not getting what was originally called for in the design documents. Now, it's up to the owner to make a determination on whether they're going to accept this alteration to the contract drawings, or they're going to require that the contractor remedy the situation and do something differently. And so we basically become, we like to call ourselves the eyes and the ears of the owner. Because that's what we are. We really are their eyes and ears. We look for things with our knowledge base that you, as a dentist, would not have the knowledge base for. There's a reason why we spec things. There's a reason why we call things out. There's a reason why we select this kind of material or this kind of solution, because it performs in such a way that that's what we want to try to achieve because of whatever the reason might be. Maybe because, you have a lot of water, or you have a lot of snow or ice, or you have some issues and you want to protect the building because of that. Does that answer what you were talking for, huh?
Yeah, it does. We can go into a lot of different details and example, but that would suffice.
So obviously, we've got the contractual relationship as the premise of what we're going to talk about tonight. So you've got your communication going on between the owner and the contractor, and the owner and the architect, and the communication or lack thereof between the contractor and the architect. Kind of, that's where one of the biggest things we see fall apart. And you got to be very leery of it and be very careful of it. Since we're the eyes and ears of you, the owner, we need to know everything that is talked about or discussed or questioned or brought up and to the nth degree, right, Hong? We don't care if it's an idiot little dinky thing. We want to know about it, don't we?
Yes. Let me see. Forgive me if I'm a little blunt, because this is straight talk. We can't protect you if we don't know what you say or what you did in the field and when we are absent. For instance, here's a prime example. If a contractor come and say, the architect specify a wood door. Well, for most people, a wood door is a wood door. You throw a little paint, or you throw a little stain, you put hardware on it, and bam, you got a door. But we specify a solid wood door, wood birch veneer. It is to be factory finish, and so on and so on. And it's a higher quality product, It's more consistent because it's done in a controlled environment, and the contractor tells you, the owner, hey, you know, we can do this in the field. Here's the wood door. Does it look like something that it looks exactly the same as what the architect specified that's made by ABC Wood Door Company? And you go, yeah, that looks, you know, that looks about the same. Well, you didn't say, you did not give the approval for a substitution. You just agree with the contractor. Yeah, it's a wood door. It looks nice. But the contractor reads it differently. He reads it. He shows you something. You agree that it looks the same. Therefore, he can go ahead and change it. If the architect is not involved or is not aware, when we go out and look at the project, you touch the door and you go, why does it sound hollow? Oh, it's a hollow core door. It's not a solid door. It looks the same, finished the same, but why is there blemishes? Why is there a difference in the variation in the, you know, in the stain? Oh, because it's not factory finish. It's field finish. Okay, so we can simply say, ah, this is not the what was then specified. Who authorized the, you know, the substitution? This, that confusion, that miscommunication, it was not involved, were not, let me see, Jim, what was that, what is that phrase that you say when a contractor wanted to propose a change to the owner? You, I think you say something like, you know,
well, let me ask my architect about that, and we'll get
amen
back to you.
That.
Okay. That's the phrase. Write it on your hand. Put it in your phone. Do whatever you need to do to be able to keep that in your memory bank. That every time a contractor asks you that they want to do something, is let me get with my architect and we'll get back to you, because there's too many things. And Han is exactly correct. There's too many factors and there's too many issues that could be affected by little, dinky, simple, well, that's just a door. No, it's not. It's not that simple. It's not just a door. Or, you know, that's just a roof. No, it's not. It's not just a roof. We could go on for hours and hours and hours, and we've only got an hour tonight to be able to go over a lot of this stuff, but we go on for hours and hours and examples of things that are not always the same. And to the layperson, they may look the same. On the surface, it may look the same, but in reality, it doesn't wear as long. It doesn't have the kind of warranty. It hasn't been installed the correct way. There's potentials for leaks. There's potentials for the product not performed correctly. It may be even installed in such a way because it was never done properly that it even doesn't even have a warranty, where our specifications have called for a product to be installed written manufacturer's requirements so that it can be warrantied, specifically things like roofs, which are very expensive to repair after the fact.
Not just the roof, man. No, not just the roof itself, but the product underneath the roof, the interior that's damaged because it failed. Okay. Again, every little nod of the head, every little utter the word yes or I agree. If you're not aware, if it's not explicitly that they're going to change this or they're going to do this or that without your architect representation, you're going to be caught with surprises. Okay. Again, I think no, this conversation is not intent to to bash or beat the GC. Its intent to protect you, the owner. Its intent to improve communication and why. We found that, and the working relationship, even though the architects and the contractor don't have a contractual relationship, they're not responsible for each other. But it does not necessarily that their working relationship to be adversarial. It's always best that the contractor and the architect work together as a good team members, because ideally you get the best product, you get the best finish for your building, you get the biggest bang for your buck.
Absolutely. We could give examples after examples of contractors who are exceptional communicators, and they communicate all aspects of the project through the proper process, which means it goes through us and it goes to at least to us and to the owner at the same time, preferably through us first before it even gets to the owner. And those projects run so smooth, and they run so quickly. It is just a pleasure to be involved with a construction entity who knows how to communicate and knows the process of it and why it exists, why that process exists. And you know, I keep talking about the process, but it's real simple. Everything has to go through us because we're your eyes and ears. And then we'll process it and then communicate to you as a recommendation of what we recommend you do or not do. And then you make the final call. But remember, we're your advocate. That's why we exist during the construction time. And that's probably the biggest reason why we always recommend that we still are involved during construction, just for that reason. Who's going to do it? If we're not there to observe, and we're not there to see what's going on, to see all the issues, and to act as your eyes and ears, then that falls upon you. Now, you, the owner, may or may not have the ability to really properly do that scope of work. And that's fine. That's why you hire us. And, you know, you focus on dentistry. We'll sweat the other details.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes if you invite, let's say we spent 2-3 months on the design aspect of a building from the ground up. There's a lot of discussions. There's a lot of why certain things are done. There's a number of design scenarios until we get to the point where you go, this is exactly what I'm looking for. Another member that of the team introduced at the tail end, unfortunately, often they are the interior designers. Okay, so I'm going to take this opportunity to kind of bring that to the forefront a little bit. Their interior designer are not trained at the same level of technical and knowledge as an architect. They are more focused on the aesthetic. So they may want to introduce some ideas that they thought could be really bring a wow factor onto the design. Ego play big in the design field. And unless that individual come to the table with a little bit of humbleness and say, can you bring me into the design? I like to introduce this kind of, this idea. How would that work? Can it work? Then the entire team can look at it, ascertain the value of it, and can integrate and or dismiss. Okay? But if you have somebody that runs into the project and start to act like a bull in a china shop, you're going to have problems. And it happened too often. It's not a pleasant experience. It happened too often. And so it hijacked the project. Things started to change without really knowing why. And you, the owner, may think it's a great idea, but without remembering that certain thing was done because it was done for efficiency. It was done because of code. It may have been done because of your future plan. So you have to look at the entire process, the entire picture, the big picture, before any decision are made after the design is done, because it could create a huge problem down the road, because it's innocent that you move a door, but that door just happened to be needed for future additions or expansion or whatever. So communication, again, no matter who they are, what role they play on the project, there is the architects are responsible for the design, for the technical aspect of the building, for the code aspect of the building. Those three areas play a big success in the finished product of your building. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. Now, the contractor is responsible for what we like to call the means and methods of construction. They're responsible for taking what was designed, the design intent, and creating it in reality. So the means and methods are basically, you know, how do you lay up that block wall? How do you lay up that brick wall? How do you put up that drywall? How do you do all the things you have to do to be able to perform in such a way that they fulfill the requirement of the design? Obviously, there are industry standards, but there is also a lot of different ways of doing things. You may say, well, I mean, there's always, you know, to put up a steel stud wall and to put screws in the drywall and to tape it and to get it ready to paint, that's pretty straightforward. No, it's not. And here's why. There are a multitude of things that have to happen. One is which there's a lot of coordination in that everything that has to be done inside that wall before you get to the issue of putting up the studs has to be planned for. Let's say you have underground stuff, that electrical lines or plumbing lines or whatever, those all have to be put in the under slab area if you're on a crawl space or on a slab on grade, and before you even put the stud wall up. And then when you put the stud wall up, you have to have all the internal parts of that stud wall built before you start skinning it with the drywall. Oh, and by the way, you also have to have inspections done during that time. Those nasty little things called inspectors that have to come out and observe. They actually inspect as opposed to us, we observe, because it's their role to inspect. That's what they're basically, that's what they're hired for by the city or the state, depending on what they're inspecting for. And so you got to have all that done. Now, that's just the inside stuff. Then there's the outside stuff. Let's say that most people don't know, but there's actually 5 levels of finish that you can put on a wall. When it comes to finishing the drywall on a wall, there's 5 different levels. The first level is very inexpensive, and it also is not very smooth. It isn't very attractive. It's not something that you would want to then paint over and expect to see an attractive-looking wall. Now, does it meet code? Absolutely. It meets code. It's taped and finished to a certain level. But we may have specified a level 4 or a level 5, which is the highest or smoothest with the least amount of variation in it, because you're putting on a paint system, for example, that's kind of a maybe a semi-gloss because you want to be able to keep it clean. A semi-gloss wall, I'm sure you've seen it before, maybe even your own house, you know, paint something with a semi-gloss or a gloss paint, and it'll show every imperfection you can think of. I mean, every little particle of dust and every little hair fiber that got on the paint will show up. Well, if you look at a wall, it'll do the exact same thing. So, but those are drastically different systems. And it's, and again, that's, again, just a very simple example of the technical aspect of a simple wall. Right, huh?
Yes. This is, there's part of the things that we see a very common failure on a project is that there's a thing that's called specification. And Jim mentioned it. And specification is almost like the instruction manual for, let's say you buy a desk that you're going to assemble. There's an assembly manual to show you how all the pieces come together. The specifications serve that purpose. And so in the specification, if a contractor don't read the specification, that would be the first problem on the project. Because if they're not familiar enough with the project, now, as you go through the, you know, as the construction progresses, you will hear this very often. Oh, I didn't bid it that way. I didn't bid for that finish. You know, like Jim say, you know, there's five level finishes. We love to have level five because it's almost perfect. They're beautiful walls if it's done right. Okay, but if the bid was, or the project was designed to give you a high-end finish, and the project was bid to provide a high-end finish, you expect that. If the contractor come back and say, I didn't read that, I didn't bid for that, and he didn't document that up front when he bid the before you award the job, then there is some tussling to do that you don't want orange peel wall finish texture. You want to have a level five because that's what's bid for. So, yeah, there is a lot of wiggle room if they don't read the drawings. That's a very common excuse we get. There is a way they, and then we have to figure out how do you, what needs to be done to rectify it. Or what is a agreeable settlement to rectify it? Jim?
Yeah, exactly. Now, again, Han was right. We're not trying to bash on contractors, and not every contractor is trying to do something differently. It's that means and methods that we were talking about is their responsibility, yes. And so the team working together is how it really succeeds. When I say working together, it means that we're communicating. They're communicating with us, and we're communicating with you, and the three of us communicate together. So at a bare minimum, all communication should happen between all three of us at the same time at a bare minimum. To at least have an opportunity to have the most successful possible project and alleviate any of these potential, I want to call them gray areas, or any of these potential conflicts of, well, the contractor comes back and says, well, the owner said it's okay, I could use this. Really? I was there during that conversation. He didn't say that, or she didn't say that. Okay. And by the way, you didn't follow up with the particular process of necessary submittal for approval. The other part of the communication is all communication needs to be in writing. That's mandatory. Talking on the phone is great. You can do it till whenever. But you must follow up. It has to be done in writing and everyone copied properly so that there is a record of the approval or the denial or the direction. You want to have all communication done in writing. That's why we have requirements for things like shop drawings. You know, shop drawings are those things that the contractor puts together and tells us, the architect, all the little pieces and parts that they're going to use to put whatever, for example, let's say windows. We'll get a window set of shop drawings, and that could be 20 or 30 pages long. And it'll have every aspect of that window, its size, its shape, its relationship, its material, its thicknesses, its colors, its detail and how it should be installed. All that stuff is in there. And we review it to make sure it meets the design intent that we specify. And then it becomes a document that the contractor installs from. So it's basically like their instruction sheet on some complicated things like windows or other systems, like an elevator. Elevator shop drawings are pretty complicated shop drawings. Again, that all comes in writing. It comes to us. Now, another little area of that's important to take note of, and this has to do with the monthly draw. And you say, what the heck is that? Monthly draw is typically every month a contractor will apply for payment of what they have done that month and what they have stored either on-site or in an approved off-site location for materials that month. So the work that's been done and the materials that are either on-site or stored in an approved off-site location. So they get paid basically 1 month after they've done a work. Now, that draw needs to come to us for certification. I was having a meeting great with a banking entity here, and they're based out of Southwest Ohio, and they do a lot of dental work. And we were meeting, and one of the questions that was raised during that meeting was, "Do you certify the pay draws?" And I said, "Well, absolutely." And the reasoning behind that is that we're your eyes and ears. We understand construction. We understand that when you look at a pay draw and it may say that 50% of the drywall work is done and 100% of the drywall material is on site. Okay, and it goes down through every little piece and part of the building. And we'll go down through and look at all that. We'll verify that it's true and that, yes, it looks like 50% is done. And yes, I see that the other 50% of material is sitting on site. And when we certify that, that's the protection that the banking industry, the banking entity that's your part of your team, needs to know before they write the check to be able to pay the contractor for that month's work. Now, we also hold back a little bit. It's called 10% retainage, and that's held to make sure that the contractor performs everything and you have a little cushion at the very end, and eventually he'll get paid that 10% when he's completed the complete project. But if you fail to do that process, what do you run into, Han? Because we've seen it happen.
Yeah, actually, Jim left that one out, okay? Yes, we need to certify the document. So that draw. But once we identify, the amount that the request for payment, the amount that need to be paid, and so on, that go, and then once we certify, it goes to you, the owner. It doesn't go directly to the bank. It goes to the owner. The owner sign off, and with that two signature, it goes to the bank. And then the bank. If the bank worth their salt, they will look for the certification, and then they will pay the you know, the invoice. If that process is skipped, let's say the contractor submits the draw to you, the owner, and they say, you know, we did, you know, 50% of the drywall, 100% of the material is on the site, and you didn't know that that's a lie, you sign off, and you give it to the bank, and the bank pay. What happens, you just gave the contractor what he or she did not perform, and you overpay. The worst that can happen, and we experienced that, is that the contractor got more than they had work on, and they walk off the project. That's the worst that could happen. Okay, let's say you have a project that's worth $300,000, and the first month on the job, on the first day of the second month, they submit for $150,000 invoice. You go, oh, there's an invoice. I need to sign it. Give it to the bank. The bank look at it. The owner say, okay, I pay. He did only 30%. Let's say hypothetically, if we divide everything evenly, 3 months worth of work, $300,000 the first month, they should get $100,000. Okay? It's just for simple math. But they submitted for $150,000, and the bank didn't know any better. You didn't know any better, and you approve it. We didn't look at it because it was not submitted to us, the architect. You just gave the contractor $50,000 more than what he or she did. $50,000 on a $300,000 project that you financed is disaster.
It's risky. It's very risky. Now, there are lots of opportunities for good people to do good things. And sometimes contractors make, you know, innocent mistakes, and they ask for a little bit more or too much than what's actually out there. And, you know, maybe you get lucky in that kind of situation, and the contractor rectifies it the next month. Or maybe you don't get lucky, and the contractor decides, hey, I've got a golden opportunity. I'm going to, you know, declare bankruptcy, change my name, become XYZ contractor from XYX contractor, and you have no recourse. They're gone. They may not even be in existence anymore. You're going to have to try to find them. You're going to have to sue them. All of that is just nasty. It's expensive. And here you are. You're stuck. You've got a building that is under construction, partially, to some level or another, and you have no contractor to get the work done. The bank's looking at you like, well, that's your responsibility, not ours.
You approved it.
You approved it. You're on the hook for this money, and you have no recourse. So, you know.
Oh, it get worse, Jim. It get worse.
Yeah, it gets really worse.
It get worse. Here's the worst part. Now, a month went by. The demolition team went in and did the job. They started to cut the floor, and they started to, you know, the plumber started to put the the plumbing in and all that stuff. Those subs, if they weren't paid, guess who's get to pay them?
You do. Yep.
Okay.
So they put a lien on the project, and they're going after you personally for the money that they're owed.
Yes. That could be a really, really bad thing. So the architect is there not just to be your eyes and ears on the design and technical aspect of the project and the code issues and so on. They also watch after your pocketbook for you to protect you from making errors and lose your shirt because it's not that hard. Okay.
It could be very disastrous. And just one little area could be very disastrous. And we've seen it happen. We've seen it where construction companies decided that they wanted They had a golden opportunity. They pulled a stunt like this, got the bank to pay a substantial chunk of money, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. They take off. The owner's stuck with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to a bank that now all of a sudden you've got to try to find a way to recoup and reincorporate everything and still get this project finished. Well, you may have been leveraged right to the edge, and now you're going to go back to the bank and say, I need another $400,000 or $500,000. But that they were only going to give you $400,000 in the first place. What are the chances of that happening? Slim. And
yep.
So, it's I guess the information is be so careful in everything you do when you're in the construction process.
Jim, contractually, when the architect is involved in after the permit, the technical term is construction administration, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So when the owner, is considering or contemplating that service, the construction administration, the things that we often hear is, we're the contractor, we know what we're doing. You don't need the architect to provide construction administration because that's what we do. Trust me, that's not what they do. Okay. When you only have the contractor's job is to build what was designed and make sure that they adhere to what was specified. And that they only get paid what they've done. If there is nobody except you, the owner, who's not familiar with the process, the technical, the code, the materials, and stuff like that, you make the decision without representation, without somebody like the architect behind, watching after you or representing you. It could be disastrous. Yeah. Often it is. Okay?
And it could be. We've got about 10 minutes left here, Han, and I want to bring up one important thing, and that is, what's the right way? We've talked a little bit about some of the right ways. Obviously, the most important right way is that everyone, the three entities, the architect, the owner, and the contractor, must communicate together on all aspects of everything and follow the proper process. Okay. That goes a long way in saving everyone and creating a very successful project. But if you run into a situation, and like Han said, you don't want to be in an adversarial situation, but sometimes it gets to that, and that's okay. Han and I are big boys. We can hold our own with just about anybody, because we have knowledge that maybe others don't have, and we use that to be able to deal with some of the issues that are out there. And sometimes the lack of knowledge is what really gets you in trouble. Now, the other area that I wanted to bring out that was very important, and it has to do with the aspect of properly establishing the ground rules. Now, when you first have the project start off, if the contractor understands that he's not going to get away with, or she's not going to get away with, going directly to you, the owner, to get answers. Okay. If they understand that everything has to go through the architect, you're light years ahead and you're protecting yourself. They understand that that's how it has to be. And if you don't back down from that during the whole process of construction, you'll be fine. And things will work out usually pretty well. And if a contractor understands that that's how it's going to be, that's great. But the minute you open yourself up to, let's say you're having a conversation with a contractor, and like Hans said, it could be real simple as, well, you know, we got this and we got that, and let's, one time, once you do it once, you're going to open yourself up to it happening multiple times, and you got to be so careful of that. So don't fall into that trap. Don't allow that to happen. I guess is, you know, a word for the wise. And always use that terminology that if a contractor asks you a question, your answer is to be, let me talk with my architect about that before I give you an answer. That'll save you.
Yeah,
that'll save you every day of the week.
Yeah, it's often under the premise that it will save you time if the contractor just go directly to the owner.
Time and money, Juan. It will save you time and money.
Yes, and we respectfully disagree because often the decision that you are asked to make have ripple effects on the project that you're not aware of, on a technical aspect or code aspect, and once that is brought to light to the architect, we may have to demand that to be corrected because it violates codes or whatever, and that happened all the time. Okay, so protect yourself by repeating after Jim, you know, let me consult with my architect, or better yet, go to the architect, communicate with them about this before it is brought to me. Okay, because that allows us the opportunity to serve you, to protect you, and protect the integrity of the project. Jim?
Now, one last thing I want to talk about real quickly, and that has to do with schedule. It's important in the construction owner contract that there's a schedule established. And that schedule, and you may say, well, why? Well, schedules are crucial in that it gives an understanding of how long the contractor is going to be given to be able to produce what he's been being paid to produce. Now, we all know that, let's say you're putting on 5 more operatories on your existing practice. Well, each one of those operatories make you a bunch of money every month. And if you miss a month because of delays, there's a pile of money times 5 that you never get back. So it is a financially to your advantage to be able to establish a schedule. Now, there might be one or two instances, and I'm going to give you one example of when you're going to leave the schedule open to the contractor. And we've seen this happen. We're working on a project right now where it's currently in the situation, and it's working out okay because the contractor is a very responsible contractor. In this particular situation, the owner said, I need to have this building done for as cheap as physically possible. The contractor said, fine, I'll do that, but let me adjust the schedule so that I can do it in between other projects. Okay, so there's like, you know, times where maybe a crew's not working on this particular project, they can come over and do the work on the project that we're talking about. Okay, so it allows the contractor the flexibility to keep his crews busy 100% of the time working on the work, and thus he can give it to the owner at a lower price, with the understanding, of course, that it needs to get done within a broad certain point of time. Not that it would go on forever, but that would probably be the only case that we would recommend that you not have a construction schedule. You've got to establish a schedule. If not, the contractor, I mean, he or she has got you. you're under construction. You're three quarters of the way done. You know, you're weeks away from what needing to be moved into the place. And, you know, it's like, if you don't have a schedule, what are you going to hold them to? They're just, it's going to continually delay, drag. We see it happen all the time. They may go to other projects, and it's like, you need to get into your project. Well, if there's no schedule in your contract, you have no recourse. Huh?
And let me see the response from the contractor in terms of your question, when will you get this done? And his or her response is very soon. That's not good enough.
Okay. No.
Pin it down to a date. The reason why also that when the project is bid and awarded, part of the bidding process, the contractor will tell you it will take us this many days to build your project. All the contractor need to provide that information. So you know that on the end of the third month, you can plan on the moving in. Okay? There, sometimes things happen. It may delay a week or two, but you know there's a schedule that they're going to adhere to. If they don't, if that schedule is not adhered to, it's going to drag on and drag on and drag on, and it become a major pain in the butt because
very, very costly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so it's important to establish the date, the finish, the schedule, and hold them to it. Hold them to it.
And one of the things that we do on is very important as well, is during, even before the contractor is selected, we will help you by reviewing the contract bids. And one of the things we look for, okay, what's the schedule? You know, because let's say you get five bids in. Three of them are $400,000, round numbers, close to each other. And they're all at 3 months. But then you have somebody that is, $100,000 cheaper, but they're at 5 months. Well, wait a minute. Is 2 months worth $100,000? I don't know. We'd have to evaluate that. Because if 2 months is worth $100,000, well, then give them 6 months, and maybe they'll give it to you cheaper, right? If you follow that logic. So we will help you review that to get an understanding to make sure that everything is there and that you're selecting even the right contractor from the very beginning.
Yeah, so what we're saying is that, communication is important. Schedule is also very important. You have to have one. The contract, one of the things we're trying to establish is that the architects on the project don't establish the schedule. The schedule, the construction schedule is established by the GC and held he or she's held to that based on the contract you have with them. So they control the schedule. We just help to make sure that they adhere to it.
Exactly. Well, they adhere to the complete design integrity of the whole project. Well, hopefully it's been, we spent a little bit over an hour talking about a lot of things. And we don't do that to scare you, and we don't do that to badmouth any particular entity or group thereof. There's always great contractors out there, and there's not so great contractors. Just like there's great architects and not so great architects. And nobody's perfect, and there always are issues that come about. But at least if you have the protections in place and the protocols and the systems in place, you'll be able to, be protected and also pretty much be able to have a very successful project when you get through the whole process itself without losing arm and limb as one would say, and a whole bunch of stomach acid. Like, so again, hopefully it's been educational and useful. We're real thankful for you listening in, and we, Han and I, like to do this so much that it's like, even when we're not in town or we're not, you know, not in the particular situation, we'll still want to try to do the show because this stuff, this information is crucial. And we like to get that information out there. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback from a lot of people, a lot of dentists out there that listen to the show, and they're learning things. And we're going to just keep getting interesting subjects. We're going to do our best to keep getting more interesting subjects, try to get some more guest people on the show. And if you have any questions, get a hold of us. You can get through the website. We'll do our best to answer them. So with that, we look forward to next week. And Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Fantastic. And wow, we blew through another hour. Certainly appreciate all of you spending the time with us, plugging in. Hopefully we didn't bore you to death. But it's, like I say, like I promise, it's more exciting than watching paint dry. Right? Meanwhile, stay safe, stay healthy. And until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.